WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli. I'm usually the TV critic here, but today, while Terry's away, I'm filling in as guest host. One of the people I wanted to interview was Gregory Hines, who's not really known for his TV work. But pretty soon, I bet, he will be. The Gregory Hines Show premieres next month on CBS, and Hines stars as a widower with a 12-year-old son, played by Brandon Hammond. It's one of the warmest and best family sitcoms I've seen in years, and the on-air relationship between father and son is something truly special.
See, there's this girl at my school, and she's my lab partner.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of like each other.
Really?
The other day she came over, and when she left, we kind of kissed.
Really?
No, not really. She kissed me.
Oh, she kissed you?
Yeah, I didn't know what else to do, so I kissed her back.
Really?
Now, every time I see her, every time I'm near her, I get kind of stupid. Is that normal?
Yeah. Yeah, what you're going through is perfectly natural. No, man, first time I ever laid eyes on your mother, I just became a complete idiot.
Oh, so you're saying it never goes away? I can remember Mom's kisses.
Yeah, me too.
Kissing me, aren't you?
That's right. Yes.
Gregory Hines has starred on Broadway and in films, but never before has he appeared in a weekly TV series. During his lunch break, Hines took time to talk about the show and his new workload.
Well, it's nothing like I thought it would be like. I thought it was going to be a lot harder, and it's not. It's been very enjoyable. The tempo that we set last week, I think, in terms of the production and the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday work week, was very relaxed. And it even feels more relaxed today in our second week of production. So I'm actually having a really good time, babe.
So actually, second week of production means you're working right now on what will be the third show taping?
Right, right.
I'm surprised that you aren't complaining about it being harder. I mean, what is the workload compared to, say, doing Broadway and Jelly's Last Jam or movies in Tap?
Well, first of all, nobody ever listens to me when I complain, Dave. So I stopped complaining. And in terms of Broadway, I mean, Broadway is very hard. 8 shows a week is hard. For me, I had to live a Spartan existence to do those 8 shows in Jelly's Last Jam for the 92-93 Broadway season. I loved it. It was a great role, and I was very happy on stage, but it a week's work took its toll, and one day off was never enough, and we went back at it again, and I'm very happy that I was in the show, but I was ecstatic when I finished after a year. This is completely different, and with this, it's like rehearsing all week at a very easy tempo,
mm-hmm.
and then there's like a reward at the end of the week that we do the show and we do it in front of a live audience, which for me is where my roots are on the live stage. So it's somewhat like making a film because we are working in front of cameras, but it's also somewhat like performing live on the stage because of the live audience. So for me, even though we've only done 2 and this is our third one, I really feel like I'm into something that I want to stay in for a long time.
Now, you have not been averse to doing television, but you've been waiting, I guess, for years until you found something that you really wanted to do.
Well, you know, I have said that, but I don't mean it to sound like I was just waiting. I mean, I was involved in the development of many different ideas and scripts and concepts with a number of different networks, and we just were never able to come up with the right thing. And then these were all talented people, And going in, we thought we had good a good concept with which to build a show around, and we were just never able to do it. I mean, it's very hard to do, and to do it with quality, and to do something that one can be proud of. So this is something that came to me. You know, I didn't have any part in the development of this script at all, the concept for this show, and I'm just so happy that it did.
Now, what was the farthest afield thing that was pitched to you or brought to you before you decided on this one? Was there an idea that just made you cringe?
No. I mean, you know, the process of it was getting involved with a network, then getting involved with a studio that wanted to produce a show, then meeting writers. And all the writers that I met at every turn, they were all talented, and they were all... they all came up with interesting concepts. At one point, I was trying to do an African-American Mad About You. At one point, I was going to be like a lounge singer. Uh-huh. They were all interesting concepts. We were just never able to then get a first draft script that was good enough to go to pilot.
I may be wrong about this, but I feel that the part that you're in right now, 3-4 shows into a brand new series, is maybe the most exciting time for a cast of actors, because the writers are beginning to see what you all can do and writing for you accordingly, and everybody's finding out about everybody else. Is that really the way that it's working?
Dave, I feel like we're on the honeymoon. I really do. After we did the pilot, of course, everybody went their separate ways, and we found out we were picked up, and we all communicated with each other. We were all very happy. But coming back together again now on our own set, as opposed to, you know, they built the set and then they tore it down because they didn't know whether we were going to be picked up. Now this is our set. You know, we have our own parking spaces on the lot. You know, everybody is just so happy to see one another again and know that we are here. We are definitely here, and we're shooting episodes. It really feels like a honeymoon.
We've actually talked around your show without talking directly at it and describing it. I've seen the pilot. I love it as a family comedy. You've been seeing many more scripts and acting in more. You tell me what the show is about.
Well, it's about Ben and Maddie Stevenson. Ben Stevenson is the part that I play. Ben is a widower of about 2 years, and he feels like he's ready now to try to find love again, having been childhood sweethearts with his deceased wife. He doesn't really have skills. He doesn't know how to go about finding love, and he's somewhat intimidated by women. Maddie is 12, going on 13, and the testosterone is starting to fill him up, and he is interested in girls. So the two of them are actually going through very similar experiences at this point. There's a terrific supporting cast. Ben is a book publisher, and he's in business with Alex, played by Mark Timtichin, who has an ex-wife, Nicole, played by Robin Riker, who has her own restaurant. My secretary is Judith Shelton. She plays Angela, who is a little bit wacky but adorable. And then there's my father, who is Maddie's grandpa, James, who's played by Bill Cobbs. And then rounding out the cast...
You did a great job with this, by the way.
...is Wendell Pierce, who plays my brother, Carl, who is a very successful lawyer, who is also a very interesting guy.
Now, it seems that there are so many relationships here that can play off your personal life. I mean, you are a famous brother of a famous brother, and mm-hmm. you are the son of a famous dad, and you yourself have a son. But this was all rounded out and just handed to you?
Yeah, it was written, I didn't want to read it because they said it's like the courtship of Eddie's father. And I thought, you know, I don't want to do something like that. And so I didn't read it. But the second time when I read it, I was thrilled. And it was written white. It wasn't written for me. It was written for anybody. And if I had passed on it, somebody would have done it because it's great.
Now, had you seen and not liked Courtship of Eddie's Father?
Well, it wasn't so much that I had seen it and not liked it. I never was a faithful watcher of that show. I saw it every now and then. I just didn't want to do a family show like that. I didn't want to do another single father show. That's something that's been done a lot. And I guess people like to see that kind of thing. I guess they like to see a single man trying to raise a kid or kids.
Well, I would guess, and I'm only guessing from my own viewpoint as a critic, is that the reason why the name Courtship of Eddie's Father is coming up is because it's been that long, almost 30 years, since you've seen a relationship on television that is so natural and so loving between a father and son. So it's not so much that it's derivative, it's that if you got to go back to the last thing that reminds you of that.
I see.
You got to go back a quarter of a generation.
Well, I tell you, since shooting the pilot and so many people saying, you know, it reminds me of the courtship of Eddie's father, you know, I now take that as a very high compliment, because even though I didn't see that show and was not a fan, so many other people were. And I have gotten many testimonies from people about how much they loved that show and how this strikes a very similar chord. And so, you know, Courtship of Eddie's Father having been such a successful show, you know, I can only hope to try to come close to that success.
My guest is Gregory Hines. He's starring in a new TV series that premieres next month. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Gregory Hines. He's in production for his new TV series, which premieres on CBS next month. Do you consider your own upbringing as being a showbiz kid or a normal kid?
Well, both, but in the best sense of the word. I was certainly working when I was a kid, but my brother and I had an act, and we weren't so successful that I didn't have a childhood. I mean, I went to school with Patty Duke, who at the time I went to school with her, we were in elementary school, and she had already won a Tony Award. First year in high school, she won an Academy Award, and she had no life. She was picked up from school every day and brought to her manager's office, and then brought to the theater for a performance, and she just missed out on the whole thing. And, you know, sometimes I read about Michael Jackson and how, you know, how the Jackson 5 was so successful. He was just working his whole childhood. Mm-hmm. We would work during the summer, on a good summer, and during the winter we would work periodically up in the Catskill Mountains on the weekends. I lived in New York, and I had a childhood. I played sports. I had a neighborhood life. I had neighborhood friends. I had school friends. I had a childhood, and ultimately, when I look back on it, traveling and working with my family, it was great. It was really great, because even though I was in show business, I still had that solid nuclear family surrounding me.
Okay. What father-son moments do you look at or have you seen on TV, either when you were watching as a kid or as a grown-up or just cribbing to do your own show? I mean, what father-son moments on TV do you remember working for you?
Well, you know, I'm a sucker for those kinds of things anyway. Anytime there's any kind of a father-son emotional thing, I mean, I can start bawling at a rerun of Bonanza, you know, when Ben, you know, he can't find little Joe, and little Joe is lost in the desert, and they finally see him laying out there, and Ben jumps off his horse and starts running, little Joe! And he picks little Joe's head up in his arm, and he takes the canteen and drops, you know, just a few drops of water on his chapped lips, and little Joe's eyes open up. He says, Pa. And they hug, you know, everything from that all the way to the Bill Cosby show. I love it. I love to see that. You know, my father wasn't able to be affectionate with me physically until I was a man, until I was around 25 or 30, because, you know, he came from a different generation, and it wasn't, you know, men were a little hesitant to be affectionate. So whenever I see it, now he's very affectionate, but whenever I see it, it just moves me so much. So, you know, I love to see that.
Are you being serious about, I mean, I know that's an actual episode of Bonanza that you described, but
yeah, you remember that episode?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they did it like every year. There had to be a canteen
somewhere.
Yeah, I mean,
once a year, little Joe would, you know, he'd come up missing, and they'd have to track him down and get there just before he died.
But you're not going to do any Western episodes of the Gregory Hines Show?
Well, we may fantasize a Western episode.
Oh, but this is a good question. I mean, are you tapping into any sort of fantasy elements or
no
dance or music? Yes, no pun intended.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna dance.
Yeah,
I'm definitely gonna dance. We'll have the fantasy sequence where I either fall asleep and you know the suggestion of dance is there and I imagine that I am a great tap dancer and that I in the dream I challenge Savion Glover to a tap challenge and I beat him.
Wow.
Which would really be dreaming. That would be a dream boy.
Oh, now you brought him up when he was just a little guy.
I know, but he's gotten so fast, Dave. I mean, you know, in order for me to steal his steps, I have to put him on tape and slow it way down. And even then, you know, it's very difficult.
What do you see on television or on stage right now? Savion's probably a really good example of the next generation of very exciting talent of the kind that you love.
Well, you know, I would have to say Savion. Because, and this is not to, you know, disregard all the other young, talented people that are coming up, but I would have to say Save because he is, I see him as like Coltrane and Miles Davis. You know, he has redefined the art of tap dancing. Tap dancing can never be the same. You know, he is, as far as I'm concerned, he is the best tap dancer I have ever seen. And I have seen, you know, while I might not have seen them all, I know what I'm talking about. And he can do things that have not been done before. I mean, you know, when I grew up as a kid, Elgin Baylor was my guy. You know, Elgin Baylor was the first person that I saw who could go up in the air and do a couple of things with the ball and then put it in before he came down. But Elgin Baylor knows, as do the rest of the people that played basketball, that there is nobody to compare with Michael Jordan. He's over here, everybody else is over there. And this is not to defame Elgin. You know, Elgin is still great, but Michael Jordan is over here. And that is the way it is with Save. And all the tap dancers get together, everybody talks, we talk about women and Save. Everybody's got a Savion Glover story. Every tap dancer, we all have our story about the time we saw him do this step, and it was so amazing. I mean, he really is the genuine article. He is, there's nothing like him.
Do you have any idea what makes him that way, what makes him so driven or so special?
Well, you know, he's a freak. He's a freak of nature. I mean, that's what these kinds of people are. You know, there's a lot of talented people around. There's a lot of great tap dancers around. And, you know, I've had the good fortune to watch Savion develop. And, you know, when he was 15 years old, he could do things that I couldn't do until I was 30. You know, he could tap. If he wanted to when he was 15, he could tap like me. He could tap like Jimmy Slide. He could tap like Busta Brown. He could tap like Honey Coles. He could tap like Ralph Brown. And, you know, a lot of kids want to try to tap like all these guys, but they can't. And he could do that. By the time he was 17, he was doing things that none of us could do. And we were all, you know, looking at each other and saying, you know, you saw it, right? I mean, I just saw what he did, but you saw it too, right? And it's just, you know, I mean, in terms of tap, which is, you know, so close and dear to my heart, I feel like tap is in good feet right now. We got a real champion.
All right, I know you have to get back to the set. I have one last question for you, if I can.
Please.
I was out at the press tour last month when you sort of officially launched your show in front of critics in Pasadena, and the whole thing went fairly well in terms of questions and answers, but there was one critic there, I didn't know her, but she kept getting on you about your earring.
I know.
I've really wondered.
I think she secretly had a thing for me.
She just kept asking about the earring. Are you gonna wear it on the show? Really? Are you gonna wear it? What? How do you walk away from something like that? And what do you think it might mean about this role model stuff?
Well, you know, I was so happy, and I am so happy that you know it didn't really affect me. It seemed to affect everybody else. You know, I found it. A sensible question, a reasonable question, you know, and I said, you know, yeah, I'm going to wear the earring. And you know, I don't have any problem with being a role model because I don't attach that much importance to it in terms of how I'm going to act and how I'm going to move around in this world as an artist. I want to be a good role model for my children. The other children, you know, what they're getting is just me, and you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, that I could help them in some way, in a secondhand way. But I feel that is the responsibility of a parent, that it is the parent's responsibility to be a role model. You know, I feel like wearing an earring is an okay role model.
Well, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but I agree with you completely. Listen, thanks very, very much for taking the time out. And I hope that you get to have a nice, tearful final episode of The Gregory Hines Show in about 2005.
Thanks, David. That's very nice of you.
Gregory Hines is starring in the new TV series, The Gregory Hines Show, which premieres on CBS in September. I'm David Biancooley, and this is Fresh Air.